Thank you. As one of the founding principals of Tetragon, I'd like to welcome you to our first quarterly investor call. We're excited about providing an update on progress to date. The format of the call will be as follows. Phil Bland, CFO for both Polygon and Tetragon, will present Tetragon's Q2 financials and report on our recent dividend announcement. I will provide an overview on our portfolio and key performance indicators. Mike Rosenberg, a founding principal at Tetragon, will provide a market outlook and opportunities for Tetragon in the future. Patty Deer, one of the founding partners of Polygon and a founding principal of Tetragon, is also on the call and will participate during the Q&A section. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments, including statements regarding the intentions, beliefs, or current expectations concerning performance and financial condition on the products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of many possible events or factors. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Phil Bland, our CFO.
Thanks very much, David. I intend to focus my comments today on the performance of the consolidated Tetragon business, covering Tetragon Financial Group Limited, or TFG, our Euronext-listed company, Tetragon Financial Group LP, a U.S. feeder fund, and Tetragon Financial Group Master Fund Limited. For further details on how those three legal entities fit together, please refer to an explanatory note that we posted on our website along with Q1's results. I'm also going to concentrate my comments on how the business has changed quarter-on-quarter in 2007, rather than dwelling too much on comparisons with the first half of 2006, when our business was only around one-seventh of its current size. When making comparisons between Q1 and Q2's results, there are three main factors that need to be taken into account. First of all, the dramatic increase in capital, which was spread somewhat unevenly over Q1, and then additional capital that came in at the time of the IPO in late April, makes it somewhat difficult to compare per share data using quarter-end share amounts only. Secondly, just to note that there was a consolidation of the three pre-IPO share classes into a single post-IPO share class. Finally, at IPO, as I'm sure you're aware, we standardized the fee structure to a lower management fee of 1.5% of assets under management and an incentive fee of 25% over an initial 8% hurdle rate. Having made those caveats, I should stress that the other key performance metrics that we report to the market each month are readily comparable and reflect a strong first half and healthy growth in the business quarter-on-quarter. I'll now run through some of the highlights from the consolidated statement of operations, which we issued to our website in summarized form on July the 17th. Also, that report is shown in more detail in the sets of financials that were released to the market on our website earlier this morning. Starting with earnings per share. Earnings per share have grown month-on-month throughout Q2, starting at $0.10 in April on a pro forma basis, given the IPO, through $0.11 in May to $0.12 in June. Top-line consolidated revenues grew by 26% from Q1 to Q2, as the capital raised during the first half was put to work on new transactions. The weighted average IRRs on those transactions in our portfolio rose also during the first half from 16.1%-16.5%, and David will be providing additional color when he comes back on the mic later in the presentation. Our operating expenses, excluding incentive fees, grew at only 20%, a slower rate than income, partly due to the lower management fees in Q2, and partly due to the lower use of leverage, resulting in a lower growth rate in interest expense. Consequently, our net investment income grew by 28% in the quarter. Turning to gains on investments and hedges, you'll see in the U.S. GAAP format financials that U.S. GAAP requires us to separate out unrealized and realized gains and losses. We actually look at the net numbers as being more meaningful, and that's what we've presented in our consolidated operating performance results report, sorry, on the 17th of July, again on our website. As noted in our global offering document, we monitor and where appropriate, hedge both elements of our foreign exchange exposure and certain credit exposures. Net gains on sales of investments and on hedging contributed around $3 million in Q2, compared with a loss of $200,000 in Q1. And the main element impacting Q2 was a mark-to-market gain of close to $2 million on CDS hedge positions, compared with a mark-to-market loss on those hedges in Q1. A comment on incentive fees. Although performance has held up extremely well, the growth in incentive fees was markedly slower than the 38% growth in net income before incentive fees. And again, this reflects the lower average incentive fees payable post-IPO. Taking into account all the above factors, our net income grew by 42% quarter on quarter, and that was almost seven times the level generated in the corresponding period of 2006. For TFG, the listed entity, the increase was over 50%, reflecting its higher allocation from the master fund. Our consolidated net assets increased by 28% between the end of Q1 and end of Q2, and more than doubled in the first half of 2007, driven by both the significant new capital that I alluded to earlier and the healthy operating performance. As stated in the global offering document, the cost of the IPO were treated as a capital expense and charged against share premium, so they do flow into the net asset calculation. I'd like now to turn to make a few comments on the dividend policy for TFG. As stated at the time of the IPO, it's TFG's intention both to pay dividends on a quarterly basis and also to reinvest part of their income back into the business to support organic growth. When considering future dividends, we don't anticipate placing a particular bias on any quarter, and it's our intention to seek to grow the dividend over time. Investors will have the opportunity to receive their dividend either fully or partially in the form of shares rather than cash, and details of our optional stock dividend plan were sent to investors and posted to the Tetragon website on the 24th of July. I'd like to conclude my remarks on the financial section by briefly summarizing the review of the mid-year performance and outlining the dividend for Q2. The management team and board are happy to have delivered strong performance in the first half of 2007, with good growth quarter on quarter, measured in income growth, earnings per share growth, and net asset growth. Following the strong 2Q results and supported by strong cash flow during the first half of 2007, last evening at a board meeting, the board of TFG approved the payment of a dividend for Q2 of 15 cents per share, which is the top end of the range indicated to the market earlier in July. I'll now hand back to David to cover an update on the portfolio.
Thanks, Phil. Through June, Tetragon has completed investments totaling $1.41 billion across 65 separate CLO transactions and contracted with 36 different collateral managers. The portfolio remains largely composed of exposure to senior secured loans through CLOs, with 64.8% of the risk capital invested in broadly syndicated and middle market senior secured loans across both U.S. and European markets. The balance of the risk capital is invested in CDO Square transactions, representing 3.9%, and one single ABS structured finance deal representing just 1.3% exposure. On a look-through basis, we have exposure to approximately $15.5 billion of senior secured bank loans, diversified across approximately 1,600 different corporate obligors. Overall, 82% of our exposure is U.S. obligations, with 18% of our exposure residing in European names. As of June 30th, we fully invested our capital, including the incremental capital that we raised via the IPO, and are currently running a minimal leverage factor of 1.08. That's 8% leverage. As Phil mentioned, the weighted average IRR on our investments is 16.5%. As our portfolio seasons and our deals will become strongly cash generative, over time, credit spread widening should benefit Tetragon as our portfolio of senior secured loans turn over and get reinvested at higher spread levels. Our portfolio is currently running at an approximate default rate of 0.02%. That's 2 basis points, which is 87% below the S&P lagging 12-month default rate and over 99% below the historical average since June 2003. We expect to continue this trend regardless of the default environment, in that we believe that our loan portfolio managers, through various credit cycles, have tended to outperform the market averages, and they will continue to do so. The actual life-to-date collateral losses as of June 2007 remain significantly below accrued levels, with the portfolio registering an actual life-to-date gain of $400,000 versus a $60.6 million of expected losses accrued and reserved to date. This conservative valuation reserving approach is one we feel is both prudent and unique in the marketplace. Our exposure to covenant light loans is approximately 15.2%, which is well below the 35% new issue levels that were prevalent a few months ago. The recent supply-demand imbalance in the loan market should allow our managers to demand better structures, higher spreads, and firmer covenants. Our exposure to second lien loans is approximately 5% and significantly below the market norms of 10 to 15%. We tend to put limitations on this form of exposure when we structure our deals. Tetragon announced 12 new deals during the second quarter of the year. This totaled approximately $268.5 million in investment value. On the hedging side, our macro and single name hedges have performed well in this market environment, as technical factors and risk mitigation have led to spread widening ahead of any specific credit deterioration. We continue to review and hedge single name concentration exposures, with no single net exposure being above 86 basis points of total assets. We also expect to add to our single name hedges based on our credit analysis of watch list names. With that, I'll turn it over to Mike to take us through the market outlook.
Hi, I'm going to give an update on the current market and its impact on our business going forward. The senior secured bank loan market has begun to reprice, with new issue loan spreads widening on average 50 basis points due to a supply-demand imbalance. This imbalance is the result of what we believe are a variety of factors, including a large new issue loan pipeline of approximately $300 billion, combined with reduced loan demand resulting from crossover buyers, primarily hedge funds, beginning to exit the market, outflows from loan mutual funds, and finally some reduced CLO demand. Some of the overall reduced demand is a spillover effect from accounts that suffered losses in the subprime mortgage market, a market that in general we don't participate in. We would expect this imbalance to continue, with loan spreads potentially widening further as Wall Street attempts to move the new issue pipeline and to sell loans that they were forced to retain on their balance sheets. With respect to the current market and its impact on our business, it's important to stress that we believe that the loan spread widening is due to the technical factors that I just outlined. Underlying credit fundamentals are strong, as evidenced by historically low default rates. The biggest risk that our business model faces is higher than expected default rates, and thus we believe we are in a very strong position. As a result of the underlying strong credit fundamentals, as David mentioned, we have over $60 million of excess reserves that we expect would help cushion any future increases in loan defaults above and beyond the levels we accrue. In addition to the wider spreads in today's market, the supply-demand imbalance has led to a shift to a more lender-friendly market with better structured loans. As evidence, the market for covenant-light loans has basically been shut down. All of this leads to a significant opportunity for us. Our loan portfolio managers have begun to reinvest our current loan portfolio into loans with wider loan spreads and better structured deals, all while our long-term funding has been locked in at historically tight levels. Thus, going forward, this should have a positive impact on our carry trade, and thus our future earnings potential is strong. In general, our timing has been very good. As a result of the IPO, our capital base is permanent and thus mitigates the risk of contagion from other markets impairing our liquidity. Our capital is effectively fully invested, so we are not reliant on the CLO market being open to produce our current returns. We've locked in approximately $14 billion of long-term funding at historically tight levels against our loan portfolio of over $15.5 billion, which should now begin to start to turn over into wider loan spreads. Credit fundamentals are strong with historically low default rates, yet we've been accruing at the historic level of default rates, resulting in what we believe are significant excess reserves. As an example, based on the long-term average prepayment rate of bank loans, 25% of our loan portfolio should begin to reprice each year. That's over $3 billion of loans repricing at least 50 basis points wider, resulting in positive earnings growth without having to reinvest in new deals. I've been in this market for over a decade and have never seen a better market environment given our situation that I've just described. Now, having said that, our stock is currently trading at $8.50 per share, which is a 15% discount to our book value. And this is obviously not lost on us. To try and help improve investor education, we've implemented the following steps. We recently concluded a non-deal global roadshow to educate prospective new investors and plan on continuing these efforts going forward. We will also begin to selectively participate in various industry conferences focused on financial institutions in an effort to broaden our investor base. We will continue to proactively manage our investor relationships to ensure there is an informed message as to why we feel we are different from other companies, particularly those with subprime mortgage exposure. And finally, we are working hard to try and increase the number of analysts covering our stock. We'll continue these efforts and to evaluate all our options at our disposal in regards to improving our share price. In summary, we've had very strong second quarter financial results. We're conservatively reserved, and we feel that the current market conditions are favorable for future earnings growth. With that, we'd like to move into the question and answer portion of our call.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the number one on your telephone keypad. To cancel your request, you can press the hash or the pound key. Once again, that's the number one to register a question and the hash or the pound key should you wish to cancel. Our first question comes from the line of Jason Napier. Please go ahead.
Good morning and good afternoon, everybody. I just had one question, if I may, about the composition of the portfolio, and this will be, I guess, one of the things that will attract some attention. And that's the 1.3% of risk capital that's invested in the single ABS structure. Would you mind just giving a sense as to what proportion of the investment portfolio that structure represents, and also just give us a little bit more detail in terms of what the underlying assets are and how that's performing at this stage?
Sure, Jason. This is Mike. It represents 1.3% of our portfolio, so a relatively negligible amount. Having said that, that one transaction is actually performing very well. It's a CDO managed by Ellington. It was originated in 2005, and thus it didn't have that much exposure to the 2006 vintage poorly performing subprime mortgage collateral. And in fact, it now is able to reinvest at much wider mortgage spreads with better quality. So again, that one deal, which is only 1.3% of our asset base, is performing well.
Okay. I mean, just looking at the numbers, I guess if that's 1.3% of a $1.2 billion equity base, that's what, about $16 million worth of assets? Is that right?
Yeah, the notional on that deal is about, just about that, about $17 million.
Okay. And then thank you very much for the very good color on how you see the market going forward. I mean, I just guess if we take a step back and look at the broader market for leveraged loan finance, as you say, credit performance remains extremely good and the structures are strengthening all the time. Do you have a good sense of whether there will be a significant number of structures that will simply not come back to market, or do you have a sense of how long it's going to take to restructure and reprice the $300 billion of deals that you think, you know, needs to come to market in the next 6 months or so?
Well, with respect to the CLO market, which is 60% of the market, we definitely see a significant slowdown in CLO demand, and not all CLOs that are ramping right now are going to get done. That's a healthy thing because it starts weeding out the lower quality managers. The market isn't completely shut, and with better managers, we'll be able to get deals done. But we do think that you'll see a slowdown in the overall CLO activity.
Right. And in terms of, you know, whether private equity houses and so on will be able to raise finance going forward, you're bullish on the prospects for that as a source of funds for the industry.
Well, if you look at historic dislocations in the market, you have seen ebbs and flows in LBO activity. What ends up happening with respect to CLOs is when new issue loan volume slows down, you just see more activity being done in the secondary loan market. The leveraged loan market is over $1 trillion. Our underlying exposure is only $15.5 billion.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Matt Hartnett. Please go ahead announcing your company name.
Hi, guys. This is Matt Hartnett from Anchorage Capital. I just had a couple of questions. I guess one is just on the CLO market in general. From what I'm hearing, I mean, it essentially seems that the market is shut right now. There's no buyers of mezzanine tranches or very, very limited buyers of mezzanine tranches in CLOs. I mean, what do you think this means for your ability to put the money to work going forward? And I apologize if you covered this already. I came to the call late. And, I mean, what do you think this means for, I guess, the arbitrage between while I realize that the spreads on the underlying collateral have gone out, do you think that compensates or more than compensates for the widening in the liabilities?
Well, a couple things. First, the good news is our capital is fully invested. In fact, we're running at a 1.08% leverage. So to produce our current strong returns do not require us to make new investments immediately in the CLO market. Now, the current CLO market is definitely in a price discovery mode. Two things would have to happen, which ultimately we think will happen. One is the lower parts of the CLO tranches that you mentioned are still in that price discovery mode, and I think ultimately you're seeing some buying pressure coming in, realizing that those tranches have gotten very cheap. Second is loan asset spreads. Based on where the lower tranches of CLOs are being priced right now, it would require loan spreads somewhere, in talking with different people, about LIBOR plus 325 to LIBOR plus 350 basis points. So a little bit of widening still to go in the underlying loan market, all else being equal, to produce attractive equity returns in that market.
Okay, okay. And just on how you mark your stuff to market at all where there is a mark available? Because from where I'm seeing and from what I understand in the market, it does appear that there is a lot of, I know, for example, Basis Capital, the Australian hedge fund, has liquidated the portfolio of CLO equity at prices, you know, substantially below par. Is that something that's sort of filtering through to you guys in the valuations you're using, or are you just marking to a model which is showing sort of no significant impairment?
We're marking, this is Phil Bland, the CFO, but thanks for your question. We mark at fair value, not to market value, and that reflects the fact that we're long-term structurers and holders of these positions. So we're not seeing the volatility that's happening out in the market. Within the valuation model that we use, though, as I think Mike alluded to before, you may have missed it, but just as a reminder, we factor in assumptions regarding long-term defaults and recoveries, and that enables us to build a healthy buffer, which we have, the 60.6 that was alluded to early on, against future defaults.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Stephen Laws. Please go ahead.
Hi, Stephen Laws with Deutsche Bank in New York. A couple of questions. First, if you could touch on kind of maybe what a target leverage is, say, year end, and follow that up with any recent conversations you've had with the providers of your repo lines, just with their comfort with the lines being out, you know, the collateral you guys have, and just maybe update us on you know, recent conversations there.
Yeah. Right now we're running 1.08 times leverage. And what we're doing is selectively looking at the market. If we think there are transactions that make sense and we want to add to that leverage factor, we will, but we not necessarily have to do that to continue to produce our current return. So it really is dependent on the current market for investments, not necessarily just a target leverage factor.
Stephen, it's David here. In regards to our financing counterparties, we have 6 different financing counterparties with documents in place. We only use 4 of those. All of those have come back and reaffirmed terms, and in many cases actually extended terms. And I think that's a function of the nature of Tetragon and its permanent capital. So we feel very comfortable with that side of the business.
Great. And then one follow-up, if I can, just to kind of love to get your thoughts a little more on the bank loan market and maybe the differences we're seeing between the U.S. market and the European market, maybe where we are in the credit cycle in each, in your opinion, and then kind of which one you see the best opportunities in today.
Well, we like both underlying credit fundamentals for both the European and the U.S. market. We don't see any imminent change to the underlying credit fundamentals. They're both experiencing similar supply-demand imbalances. So from that respect, they are the same. But again, we like the credit fundamentals of both markets.
Great. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, that's the number one to register a question, and the hash or the pound key if you wish to cancel. Our next question comes from the line of Mike Smith. Please go ahead, announcing your company name.
Hi, this is Mike Smith at UFICO. A couple of questions. Just first of all, on the hedging, I think you guys have talked in general terms about hedging the portfolio in the past. Can you give us some idea about the type and the size and magnitude and how those have been performing in this environment? And the other thing is the buffer that you all mentioned. My understanding was that is actually, that $60 million is factored into the NAV. And if that's the case, then the discount that was quoted earlier would actually be a bit wider to actual, right?
Hi, it's David here. Let me address the hedging initially. We have sort of various forms of hedging, both micro and macro. The micro is whereby we do single name hedging using CDS on any overlap concentrations we may have or any watch list names that we may have. We also do what we refer to as macro hedging, and in this case, we have basically bought protection on the high yield index and different tranches of the index. I estimate that our present hedging is about 25% of the overall portfolio to date. In regards to the reserves, let me have Phil touch on that.
Sure. Thanks, David. Yes, as you alluded to, Mike, basically the $60 million is factored into the calculation of the IRRs, and therefore that suppresses the income that we recognize on the portfolio life to date.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Wishnow. We appear to have no further questions at this time, so I'll hand the conference back to you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Once again, we'd just like to thank you for taking the time to participate in today's quarterly investor call. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact us directly. Have a great day, everybody.